Thanks very much, Arlene. Thank you.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks very much, Jimmy. Good afternoon on this Monday afternoon. How are you? Before we go any further, listening to Philip talking to the women talking about breast cancer, just to draw your attention to a guest we had on earlier in the year, Dr. Laura Lennon. She's a GP in Galway, and she made a video, which is put up on Instagram, showing women exactly how to check themselves for lumps. And it's up there if you go to Dr. Laura GP on Instagram. Great help, because some people, they might be reading about it. Laura goes through it in the video with herself, and it's, you know, it's very informative. Dr. Laura GP on Instagram. Dr. Laura GP on Instagram. Gene Kerrigan yesterday in Sunday Independent, I know it's a day ago and probably been discussed already, but he was talking about the, you know, Simon Coveney, Catherine Zapponi, the piglet, all that sort of thing. Firstly, I'm glad that he thought that Catherine Zapponi was referring to herself as a piglet from Piglet, and I didn't know it was a restaurant. Anyway, Gene Kerrigan was the same. The other thing he said, which was this, is that it's in the scale of things, it's not really a controversy. It's not a scandal. Like, we've had a country of scandals over the years and tribunals and all that, and a few texts about a part-time job that was worth €15,000. This is what he said, isn't a real scandal. And I sort of agree with him. And then there's the new hoo-ha about the Mighty Hoopla Festival in London and Leo Varadkar, and the people in the entertainment industry here are rightly getting annoyed that on one level he's saying, no, you can't do this, you can't have the electric picnic and all that, and then he's heading off to London and he's creating a mighty hoo-ha at the Mighty Hoopla Festival. He won't be happy with that picture because his finger's halfway up his nose. He just won't be happy with that at all. Listen, a great weekend for sport. We were at the ladies' Gaelic football final yesterday, to give it its correct name, and we saw Meath change ladies' football forever. I know that's a big statement, but there was, something happened yesterday in Croke Park that was a new beginning, I think, not just for Meath, but for Gaelic football, women's Gaelic football. I'm going to quote Eamon Sweeney from The Independent. All hail the Meath miracle. It was the biggest upset in living memory. It was the bravest performance you'll ever see in Croke Park, and it may have been the finest ladies' football final of all time. Meath were earth-shatteringly, heart-stoppingly, mind-blowingly magnificent as they totally changed the football landscape and gave the game an enormous shot in the arm. We were there. What was the last one? 2019? And it was a dull affair. Dublin won, but I can't remember who they were playing, but it was a dull affair and very low score. Yesterday, from the get-go, it was excitement. It was thrilling. And Meath, from the get-go, wanted it more than Dublin. And the Meath supporters wanted it more than Dublin. And just because you're hungry for it doesn't mean you're going to get it. But they had the skill to go with the determination. Determination is one thing, but when you have a combination of hard work, skill and determination and hunger, all of those things together, and a great team spirit and the fans to go with it, well, that was the magic mix for Meath. And right from the off, when we were walking down from O'Connell Street down to up to Croke Park, the Meath supporters were making a lot more noise. Now, I was with two Dub supporters, my children. I'm neutral because I'm from Kildare. But the Meath supporters, they had their vuvuzelas, and I have a vuvuzela. I'm going to let you know about it. You know, yeah, they were there. And then when they scored the first point of the game, there was thousands of vuvuzelas all over Croke Park. And then when they scored the goal, and they were never behind. They led for the whole game. So well done. We have two players from the victorious Meath team coming on to talk to us in a few minutes' time. 51551 ray at rte.ie, 51551 ray at rte.ie. We were talking about ABBA there on Friday, with two new songs, and we spoke to Ingmarie Halling, who is the curator of the ABBA Museum in Stockholm. And she's a friend of the band and worked as a stylist with them over the years. Anyway, I see a tweet there that somebody has spotted that ABBA are the only palindromic act to have a palindromic hit in a palindromic genre. See, I love that sort of stuff. I don't know why, but I do. If I meet a Hannah, the first thing I say to her is, not how are you, or, you know, what class are you in or whatever, because they're usually, you know, I say, did you know your name is a palindrome? And they go, what? What's a palindrome? Or some say, yeah, I know my name is a palindrome. H-A-N-A-A-H, you can spell H-A-N-N-A-H, spelled same backwards and frontwards. Anyway, ABBA is a palindrome. S-O-S is their hit, which is palindrome. And pop, the genre, is a palindrome, P-O-P. So there, that's that. Another thing that caught their attention up in the office was a tweet from Brian O'Murray. He tweeted a picture of his coddle yesterday. Now, other people would have been sitting down to a traditional roast, or maybe roast beef or roast chicken. Although I'd say fewer and fewer people are having the traditional Sunday dinner. I don't know. I'm putting it out there. Anyway, Brian was sitting down, it could be Breen, to coddle. And he posted a picture of his boiled sausages. And it didn't get a good reaction. He called it the dinner of the gods. There's something about boiled sausages. I've said this before, and whenever the topic of coddle comes up, it just, there's something about it. Like if I was making coddle, I've never made it. If I was making it, I would fry the sausages first just to brown them off. And seemingly that's sacrilegious when it comes to your coddle. I read somewhere that around 37 men per year get diagnosed with breast cancer in Ireland. I see there's a man in the paper today, in the Independent, I didn't get his name, independent.ie, who was diagnosed with breast cancer, and he says that it was like being told that he was pregnant. That's how unusual it was, and that's how he, you know, that's it was so out of his experience and out of anything he thought he'd ever be told. That's how he reacted. Yes, and men can. It's not as common, obviously, as men or as women, but it does happen. It does happen. So men need to check themselves as well, is what that person is saying. Thank you very much for that. 51551 ray at rte.ie. We were just thinking, are there any other palindromic acts? Aha! Aha is one. I'm not saying, yeah. Aha is A-A-H-A. So if you can think of any other pop acts that are palindromes, do let us know. 51551 rayatorg.ie. It's the important things. Yes, it is the important things. Let's tell you about our quiz of today. Yep, today is the 6th of the 9th, 6th of September 2021. We've cobbled together 10 questions on events that happened on this day over the years, decades, centuries. And we're looking for two people to answer 5 questions each. If you would, 2 people after 4 o'clock, 5 questions each. And the prize this week is a 2-night break with dinner on one evening at the Radisson Blue Hotel and Spa in Limerick. And Limerick City is a fantastic base to explore the wonders of both the Wild Atlantic Way and Ireland's ancient East. A short drive from the hotel, guests can marvel at the cliffs of Moher. They can learn to surf at the world-renowned Lahinch Beach or soak up some history at Bunratty Castle and Folk Park, or you can visit King John's Castle, which is there beside you in Limerick City. You can find out more about the Radisson Blue, inua.ie, inua.ie. So, if you want to take part to answer our qualifying question, which is this: in which Irish county would you find the town of Gorey? In which Irish county would you find the town of Gorey? 1850 715 900. That's 1850 715 900. Now, yesterday there I was feeling sorry for myself and a little bit stiff because, as I was telling you on Friday, I did the recovery run on Saturday. We had Austin Toohey in here a while back and he told us he works with people who are recovering from addiction, and he told us about this half marathon he had organised from Ballymun to Drimna. And because this is recovery month. So he invited me along. Went along on Saturday. It was one of those life-affirming days, events. Had the best chats ever on a run. I met loads of really interesting people. Some people are in recovery. Some people who help people are in recovery. We went to recovery centres in Finglas and Carbera. And one in the city centre and out to Drimna as well, and all, loads of places beside. It was just, I met Stephen and I met Deco and I met Eamon and I met Rob from Kildare and Michael and Patrick and Sean did the dance to get us warmed up. It was Father Paddy, I think it was Father Paddy, sent us off with the prayer of serenity. You know that one, which is one of the pillars of the 12-step programme. And it was just everybody was there for a reason, and it was amazing to meet people who were in recovery. People, I had chats, so many chats with people who had been addicted to heroin, and now they were running 13 and a half miles on a Saturday morning through the streets of Dublin, and there was just something life-affirming about it. So well done to everybody involved, and I'm sure there are more events around the country to mark Recovery Month, and I'm sure we'll be hearing from Austin Toohey again, but well done to Austin and everybody who did that on Saturday. So I was feeling a bit stiff yesterday after that, and then I picked up the Sunday Times and I read about the Spartathlon. The Spartathlon is probably the most difficult race in the world. It's 153 miles over 36 hours. And there was a big 3 or 4 page spread in the Sunday Times magazine yesterday. And I said to myself, there must be somebody in Ireland who's doing that. And we found them. We have found somebody who is heading into that grueling challenge in 2 weeks' time. The Spartathlon, 153 miles in 36 hours. Think about that. Think about that. And we'll be talking to Han, who's attempting to do that for the second time. You would think if you did it once, that should go, that's it, that's it, I'm never doing it again. But Anne's attempting to for a second time. So we'll be talking to her on the programme, as well as the two girls from Meath and loads more besides. My name is Eve. It's a palindrome, it is. Best wishes, Eve Parnell. And yeah, about the coddle, I feel the same about boiled sausages. Navin in Meath is a palindrome. It is. Whoop, whoop, up the royals. I will defend coddle forever. Up the dubs, says Linda. And thanks for the information, Re Dr. Laura Instagram page and her breast check video. I feel that is something that kids should be taught in sixth class in school as an add-on to their sex education class. I would have thought it was part of it, but if it isn't, it should be part of it. Not a group, but a palindromic sentence, Re Napoleon. Able was I ear, I saw Elba. Oh, yes, the famous one, isn't it? The sentence. And I see Napoleon is in the news today. Well, not Napoleon, but his hat. Wait till I see here. A newly discovered hat with DNA evidence proving it belonged to Napoleon Bonaparte has gone on display at auction house Bonhams in Hong Kong. Described by Bonhams as the first hat to bear the Emperor's DNA, it is being previewed in Hong Kong before it moves to Paris and then London, where it will be auctioned at the end of October. The hat, one of the bicorns, that's what they're called, the type of hat often seen in depictions of Napoleon, the hat on and the hand in his, you know, in between those two buttons into his jacket. It was bought by its present owner at a small German auction house who did not know at the time it had belonged to the Emperor. It was purely a chance encounter, said Simon Cottle, the managing director of Bonhams Europe. The buyer became intrigued when he realised it had inscriptions and other characteristics suggesting it could have belonged to Napoleon. And then they did DNA testing on a number of hairs that were found in the hat and they could trace it back to Napoleon. Isn't that amazing? Able was I ear, I saw Elba. So there's palindromic sentence. And Napoleon's hat. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. Yay! Vuvuzela! Yeah, yeah, yeah! Good afternoon. Rolling Stones, start me up. That got a blast at Crow Park yesterday. The pop group with the shortest name, M, is a palindrome. I suppose it is. I suppose it is, yeah. They had a hit with pop music. They did, John. Great song, too. I must play that before the end of the week. Step on No Pets. Palindrome in sentence form. From Simon. I wonder if you notice things are palindromes, does that make you a pedant? Simon, I'm asking you that because I'm a person, so maybe it's you and me, we're pedants together. I have a palindromic phone number, so maybe I could do the quiz today as I've tried loads of times to get through. That's Catherine. She gave us her number and it is a palindrome. We can't give it out, obviously. My birthday was a palindrome this year, the 12th of the 2nd, 2021. Rare to celebrate, live through one, I believe. Oh, it'd be rare enough. James Joyce is recognised as creating the longest single word palindrome in the English language. A knock on a door in Ulysses, his word is tataratat. T-A-T-T-A-R-R-A-T-T-A-T. Tataratat. 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 Yeah, so I don't know about Catherine. I don't know. Catherine, I've no pull when it comes to who gets on the quiz. So if you ring upstairs, Fiona and Rachel are there. And if they like the cut of your jib, you could be talking to us in the quiz after 4 o'clock. Right now, quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, in case you've been going around with a cardboard box over your head, and that's not advisable, you probably know that Meath won the All-Ireland Senior Ladies Football Final yesterday for the first time in their history. And on the line we have Orla and Kate Byrne from the Meath team. Hello, Orla.
Hi, Ray.
Congratulations.
Thanks so much.
Hello, Kate.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Now, I know you've watched the match back there with the rest of the team, which I want to talk to you about. You probably haven't heard the final moments of the match as it was commentated on by Pádraig Lodge on RTÉ Radio 1 yesterday. So we're going to play that for you just to get you in the mood. Here we go. The last 30 seconds of yesterday's game. Pádraig, where are you? Hello, Pádraig.
They're counting down the seconds in Croke Park. Meath have it, 65. They're going back towards their own goal. Wait for it now. The Hoosier sounds in Croke Park. It's a day of history for Meath's GAA. They took the form book of the predictions and they ripped them to sheds, to shreds. They have sent Dublin's five in a row All-Ireland ambitions up in smoke. They have produced an incredible performance of real quality, and for the very first time in their history, they are All-Ireland Senior Ladies Football Champions.
Oh, I'm getting goosebumps there. I'm a bit like him. I can't talk. Sheds, shreds, goosebumps. What do you feel like listening back to that there, Kate?
Oh, yeah, like amazing. The moment when the final whistle blew and just getting to celebrate with all the girls. It was just a moment that you just want to bottle up and keep forever. Just finally getting it over the line, and the belief was there and we knew we could do it. It was just convincing everyone else that we could as well. And I think after our performance yesterday, we've convinced everyone of that.
I think you have. Orla, describe what happened there when the Hooter went. There was a bit of a pile-up.
Oh, there was a bit of a pile-up, all right, yeah. And unfortunately, I was at the bottom of it.
Oh, right,
so
okay.
that didn't turn out too well for me. But look, it was amazing. We were just, I think all of us were in slight disbelief. It was phenomenal, that last couple of seconds just before the Hooter went. We kind of knew, you know, that time was up and that we were in possession at that stage. So we knew the game was theirs. And I just, like Kate said there a second ago, I just would do anything now to go back to that moment again. And we're still in disbelief over the whole thing. Yeah. Even after watching it again today, it just feels amazing.
Just so people know, whatever, I don't know if it's done in other matches, but there's a countdown on the big screens. So all of your fans, when it came to about 15 seconds to go before the Hooter, everybody started counting down. And you had possession, as you say, and there was this amazing build-up.
Unlike the men's game, we have, in women's football, we have the Hooter, so the game is paused throughout the game when there's stoppage. So when those final few seconds come and the Hooter goes, that's it, like that's the end.
Yeah.
So when you look up at the big screen and we saw a few seconds or just under a minute left, we kind of knew at that stage it was ours. But at the same time, you know, Dublin are capable of anything, so we knew we had to really just keep going right till that final Hooter.
Kate, will you tell people who don't realise how meteoric your rise to this level has been? So, was it only last year that you won the intermediary final?
Yes, so in December 2020, we would have won the All-Ireland Intermediate Final. And that would have been third time, really, for us. We were there in 2018 versus Tyrone, and then the following year versus Tipperary. And I suppose, like, our losses those years was probably, you know, building towards where we are today.
Yeah.
And then, of course, in 2020, there, December, we finally pushed over the line and won the intermediate. Then we went along this year and won the Division 2 league final, and we're now up in Division 1 and now we're All-Ireland Senior Champions.
So what's the magic? Is it Eamon Murray, or have you been together for, how long have you been together as a team?
Well, there are some of us that have been in on the panel since 2012, like myself and Orla, and a couple of the other girls have been here since 2012, and the team has been through lots of lows and lots of highs. And it was in 2017 when Eamon Murray and his management team came in, and it's just been a building process since then.
Yeah. So Emma Duggan, that goal, have you spoken to Emma about that, Orla? Was she going for a point or was she going for a goal?
Oh, she's gone for gold. Yes. She definitely meant it. I think Emma's just a class player. Like, I'm sure, and I know you were at the game yesterday, Ray?
Yes.
But I'm sure you've seen Emma in action, and she's just a phenomenal player. And to be so young as well, and her maturity on the field and her experience. And she definitely meant that goal. And it set us up then for the rest of the game. It kind of just gave us that couple of points breathing space of Dublin, I suppose, and we knew going into the game that we needed to start well, and that's exactly what we did, and we kind of had that bit of space then between us for the entire game, really.
And I think Dublin were a bit shell-shocked by the way you started. You threw everything at it, and like, as I said, I'm a neutral, although I was with two Dub fans, but I felt you were going to run out of steam, but you never did as a team. You never ran out of steam for the full 60 minutes. Orla, you're a bit hoarse, Kate, so I'll talk to you about the celebrations. They went on well into the night, into the morning, I'd imagine.
Yeah, so we had an amazing homecoming last night in the night, Brooklyn Trim, and on our way home, coming through some of the villages, there was bonfires and fireworks, and when we got to the Knightsbrook, there was just such a massive crowd of people, and we were all just in disbelief coming off the bus and seeing that all these people were coming here for us, and lots of children and young girls especially out with their flags and wearing their Keep Hackney jerseys, and it really just highlighted to all of us how much it means to everyone in the county, and not just our families and our team and our management and stuff. It has just reached out beyond the inside circle of our team. Yes. So it has just meant so much to everyone.
Could you feel the support in Croke Park yesterday?
Definitely. I think a lot of us have the same feeling, that there was just so much green and gold. Yeah. It felt like there was more green and gold than there was blue, but it was just amazing that the crowd was our 16th man, as they say.
Yeah. So both of your school teachers, primary schools, Orla, where do you teach?
I'm teaching in Rialton Mara Girls School in Donaghcloney, County Meath.
And did you book the day off? You did, just whatever way it was going to go, you booked the day off, did you?
I did. I booked a couple of days off.
Right, okay. And where do you teach, Kate?
I'm in St Mary's Parish Primary School in Bryanstown in Drogheda.
Yeah. So when you'll have to bring the cup in eventually, but when Miss comes in later on in the week and she's in All-Ireland, she has an All-Ireland medal with her, that's going to be big news, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the support, Ray, from everyone, especially my school over the last couple of days. Obviously, we only went back to school a couple of days before the match, but since we went back, there's just been such a buzz, and the kids have been so excited, and teachers and kids doing artwork and flags and everything around the school. It's just been phenomenal. And even outside of that, as Kate was saying earlier, across the whole county, we're just so appreciative of everything and all the support. It's just been amazing. It's blown us away. Yeah.
Kate, I was saying at the top of the programme that I thought yesterday was a new beginning for ladies football. Just it felt different to me than other games I've been at. It's up a level.
Yes, definitely. And, you know, I suppose Dublin over the last 4 years has brought it to a level, and that's what we all want to get to. And we aspire to get to that senior level. And I think we've built over the last couple of years, and finally yesterday we pushed it over the line. So definitely women's sport and LGFA and everything has grown over the last couple of years. You can see where the 2020 campaign and little sponsorship and LGFA and everything has pushed that too. So.
Yeah. How many were at? We couldn't find out how many were at it yesterday.
We actually don't know the final.
No, right, no, final good, because we couldn't find it out. I thought we were just not very good at research. So there's no final figure yet as to how many were there.
Yeah, no, yeah. There wasn't. No.
And of course, there were two games on before it, so it was a fluid thing. There were people leaving when their team had finished. Not everybody stayed on for the final.
Yeah.
So what happens this evening? More celebrations this evening, Orla?
Yeah, we're still celebrating. And,
will you be able for it, Orla? That's the question.
We'll power through.
Yeah. Get that girl a bed and some honey and warm water and ginger. Yeah. So, is there an official back of the truck thing, or did that happen last night?
Pardon?
Is there an official, you know, back of the truck with the cup? Did that happen last night?
Actually, unfortunately, just with COVID.
You can't have it.
So We just had, as Kate was saying earlier, when we got back to Knightsbrook, there was huge numbers there. And there's kind of been people coming and going throughout the day with kids and families and things and looking for photographs and autographs and everything else. So there's a great buzz everywhere we're going,
Great. Well, well done again. Sisters Orla and Kate Byrne, members of the All-Ireland winning team from Mead GAA, first in their history. Enjoy every moment, Orla and Kate. See you. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Inspirational team of ladies. Fair play to them, says somebody else at 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Conor Pope joins us once again, but this time he's live from a phone box.
That's right, Ray. That's what it is.
Yeah, well, the reason we decided to talk to you from a phone box today is because you're writing in the Irish Times today about the new phone boxes that have been, whatever, built around Dublin. How many new ones are there?
There are 22, Ray, and I just really have to correct you. They're not phone boxes anymore. They're information kiosks.
Oh, sorry. No less. Information kiosks. And you're writing about the fact that telephone on the old telephone boxes was spelt differently to how it's spelt on the information kiosks.
Well, this is actually what inspired me to write the story, because I was just I happened to be passing one of these new things that have popped up in Dublin City in recent times. And I was like, what the hell is that? And then they had this really peculiar, to me at least, spelling of the word telephone, because I grew up with the green and white boxes, as did you, and I'd say lots of our listeners, and it was always spelled T-E-L-E-F-O-N. That's how telephone was spelled. Yeah. But this new version of it has lots more vowels in it, and it was, I can't actually remember the spelling of it, and if I was to check it now, it would be...
T-E-I-L... It's T-E-I-L-E-A-F-O-F-O-N. That's how it's spelled.
So actually, it turns out that is the correct spelling of telephone. And then I was kind of thinking, does that mean that the Post and Telegraph and Telecom Air and Aircom and Air have been lying to us about the spelling of telephone for all these years? And not really, because they spelled it the phonetic way in the 1920s when the first telephone box was put up in Dublin, and that's how they were spelled all the way through until they got rid of the green and white boxes. Uh-huh. But these new ones actually spell it in the correct way, the way that the standardised version of Irish that is being used across the board.
Now, will you describe these information kiosks to us, please?
Yeah, well, for a start, it's not a box, which I was kind of disappointed by. So it's open on two sides, and then on two sides it's enclosed. And then there's a phone that's really low down, Ray. So I'm actually kneeling on the street here. So it's really low down, and I would imagine that's to make it wheelchair accessible. And then there's a big kind of touch screen that contains information about where you might be and where you might need to go. And then on the back of the box, there's a kind of an LED crystal display ad for something. So, I mean, in essence, they're vehicles to carry advertising, but they're also serving a function as touchscreen information kiosks and phones. And reality is not... Sorry, go on.
Who do they think will use these? Because, like, most people have smartphones.
Well, this is the thing. The number of people using payphones has absolutely fallen off a cliff over the last decade. And, in fact, in 2008, there was around 4,000 payphones around Ireland, and today there's 403 payphones, and I'd say if we were to talk next year there might be less than 300 payphones, and the number of minutes being spoken on payphones across the entire network for a year is less than 100,000, which means less than 30 seconds per phone per day. They're really used very, very infrequently, because as you say, most people have phones.
So
they are used in emergency situations, and people who might find themselves in very vulnerable situations, who might not be able to make a call from their home, would be able to use them.
Uh-huh.
So they do have a role in our society, and I wouldn't want to downplay that at all.
So you've spoken to the people who put these in place, and what have they got to say about their hopes and their targets for these information kiosks?
Well, I mean, this is just the way the world is going. I mean, the reality is the phone boxes are going to be decommissioned.
Right.
And like you see, some of them are being repurposed. So for instance, some phone boxes are being repurposed and they're going to become charging points for electric cars.
Yeah.
There's a phone box in Stony Batter where I live and it's been turned into a defibrillator.
Yes.
So there are options for people.
And then there was a letter to the Irish Times today about another one down the country that sells fresh eggs.
A phone box selling fresh eggs?
Yes.
Does that's the whole, you know, the thing is they are going to become part of what Ireland was in the rare old times.
Okay.
And, you know, our children certainly won't be growing up with phone boxes. Like when I was 20, like phone boxes were pretty much the only way you could communicate with people outside of your own phone in your family home.
Yes.
So if you wanted to have a private conversation without your siblings listening to you, you had no choice but to queue up at a payphone.
With your girlfriend is what you want to say.
Your girlfriend, that's exactly what I mean. So the other thing that struck me about this phone is, because I arrived up to the phone and realised I had no change, but then I was delighted to see that they took credit cards. But you know how much it costs to make the call, Ray?
How much?
50 cents a minute.
What? How long had we got him on hold for? We had him on hold for 10 minutes. That's €5. And this chat's gone. So,
however long this lasts. So talk quickly, Ray, because it's costing me money.
Okay, we get to our problem today then. Connor talking to us live from a phone box. Sorry, an information kiosk in Dublin. Dear Connor, it has been brought to my attention that my credit rating has been affected by a bank I joined in 2008. In 2008, I just sat my leaving certificate and headed off to University College Cork. During the first week of third level education experience, I joined a number of clubs and societies. I also joined a bank. I cannot remember which one. There was an incentive of lodging €1 and getting something like a pizza for free. So I, along with my pals, signed the dotted lines. I was completely unaware that there was an overdraft facility on the account. I am assuming that I was charged fees for having the account active, even though I never used it, and that is how it ended up in arrears. I'm a business and accountant teacher, that's a bit ironic, and when my phone rang from my mortgage advisor to say that my credit rating had been affected by this, I genuinely could not believe it. All of my accounts are in a very good state. I sincerely hope that a mistake I made as an 18-year-old student will not affect my dreams of building a home for me and my family. It's quite serious, isn't it?
The first thing I'll say about this, Ray, is that neither us or our listener are operating with the full information that we need. Because for a start, she doesn't remember what bank it was. Now, the second point I'd make is that banks are in the business of making money, okay? And they make money by lending to good credit risks. And this listener sounds like a good credit risk to me. So I wouldn't be panicking. I wouldn't be saying it's all hopeless, okay? But what we need to find out, and what she needs to find out, and I'll be putting this in an email to her, she needs to find out exactly what's happened. Because I'll tell you what didn't happen. If she opened an account in 2008 and left it dormant, that will not have impacted her credit rating,
okay?
For a number of different reasons. But under the rules, banks have to report details of any loan in excess of €500 to what's known as the Central Credit Register, and that's run by the central bank. And that keeps record of all the loans that you have, all the money you've borrowed over a period of time. It wouldn't stretch all the way back to 2008, so there's nothing that would suggest that that's the problem here. So what she needs to do first and foremost is she needs to go onto the website www.centralcreditregister.ie and she needs to apply for her credit rating forms, which she will get from the central bank, okay?
Yes.
And once she has that, she will be then armed with the full facts and she will know what, if anything, is being considered a black mark against her on her credit rating.
Will you give me that website address again there? Because I'm sure...
www.centralcreditregister.ie.
Centralcreditregister.ie. Centralcreditregister.ie. Okay.
And it's very simple to make the application. You apply, and then it breaks down all of your active loans that you've been paying off, and it breaks down all past loans that you have paid off. But there's a couple of caveats here. After, because I got onto the central bank, and I said, okay, what's the story with this? So it stores credit... It stores personal and credit information on loans of €500 or more.
Mm.
It's operated by the central bank. It gives a borrower, now the borrower would be our listener, an individual credit report detailing their agreements and their loans, stretching back for 5 years. And then it gives lenders information stretching back 2 years. So it's incomprehensible to me that a misstep in 2008 will be having a negative impact on our credit rating. But it is a reflection that if you do something, you know, mistakes that you make can come back and haunt you years after you've made them. So it's very important that this person establishes exactly what's going on. But it's also very important, there's a facility on the site where you can add a note to a particular debt. So, for instance, if she was to add a note to, if it turned out that it was a student loan that had gone awry through, you know, just through missteps or mistakes, yeah. She could add a little note to her credit rating that would reflect that fact.
Uh-huh.
And to be perfectly honest, if she's got a good credit rating, if her bank accounts are in good working order, and if she can afford to pay back the loan, I'd be amazed with a bank refusing her on the basis of, you know, a mistake that might have been made a decade ago.
Okay. Thanks for that, Connor. Connor, listen, we won't be doing interviews with you again from an information kiosk. The line isn't great. But we're intrigued to know how much this cost in total.
I'll tell you next week, Ray, as soon as I get the bill.
Oh, no, it's not clocking up in front of you, no?
No, that's the other terrifying thing. So if you were to just keep me on the phone for a long time, it could end up costing me hundreds of euros. I do know that there's a minimum charge of €2. It's 50 cents a minute, but it'll appear on my bank statement online within the next 20 minutes, I suspect.
Okay. Well, if you find out, do let us know, and I hope it doesn't affect your credit rating, Connor.
Fingers crossed.
That's Connor Pope, live from an information kiosk in Dublin City Centre. Thanks, Connor. Thank you very much.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Spartathlon. Have you ever heard of it? It's the world's most grueling race. It's on in 17 days' time. Runners have 36 hours to complete 250 kilometres in sweltering heat. And there's a ceiling. Only 400 people from around the world can take part. It starts in Athens. There's a lottery. So hundreds, if not thousands, of people from all over the world apply. Why? I don't know. But one Maya woman was lucky enough to be drawn out of the lottery, if that's the way you would say it. And her name is Anne Jennings, and she's sitting in front of me now. Good afternoon, Anne.
Thanks for having me, Ray.
Now, I didn't know this race existed until I picked up the Sunday Times yesterday. And in the magazine, they had a 4-page spread on it, the Spartathlon.
So I believe I haven't seen it myself. My father was messaging me last night saying it was in the paper. So
yes.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, so you have to blame this guy, Pheidippides.
Yes.
Yeah, he's the guy back in 490 BC who ran seemingly the original marathon. And then this guy called John Foden, who's a student of Greek history, went back and retraced his tracks. And that's what you're going to be running in a couple of weeks' time.
Yes.
And you've done it before.
Yes, in 2019.
250 kilometres, which is what in old money?
I think it's worth about 153 miles.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you mad?
Yes. It's my therapy.
Is it your therapy? Yeah. Is it?
I know. It's wonderful to be able to... I suppose to be able to go there and toe the line and, you know,
yeah.
to do it.
It's a privilege.
Yeah, it is a privilege, yeah.
Okay. Talk to me then about how you started, because you took to running late in life.
I did.
What? Go on, tell us.
I suppose I took to running, I suppose I would have played Gaelic and rugby growing up, and unfortunately then, as I kind of hit into my 30s, I had to have surgery. And it took me out of going back playing contact sport.
Can you talk about that surgery?
I had to have a hysterectomy.
So it was nothing
related to sport, okay. But I couldn't do physical
contact
sports anymore. So I kind of said to myself, what'll I do now? And I suppose when you've got children as well, you're trying to do something that you can fit around them. So it started off, I suppose, you know, dropping the kids to school. And, you know, going from a lamppost at school to the next one to suddenly 3 to 4 till suddenly you're doing 4K.
What year was this now?
That was 2012.
Right, 9 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then you did a 5K, did you?
So a friend of mine was doing the Great Ireland Run, so she convinced me to do that 10K with her.
Yeah.
And I was terrified and she didn't sleep, but got through it. And just the feeling when you, as you know yourself, when you do something like that, you just feel amazing. And then you're signing up for the next event you can get.
Right, which is slightly longer, I suppose, and slightly longer again. And then in that first year, you went from 10K to half marathon, to full marathon, did you?
Yeah, which is not the way to do it at all, but that's the way it transpired, yes.
And did you do much training for the 26 miles this year?
I kind of put all the training into about 3 weeks.
Right.
And ended up having... a not very enjoyable marathon, but completed it and was delighted. So I said to myself, I'm coming back here next year, I'm going to do it right. And it went from there. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Now, you see, it's a big leap from 26.2 miles to 153 miles.
Yes.
Isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Like it's, you know, it's, you're running, what is this, five marathons, six marathons?
Yeah.
Six
yeah.
marathons?
Yeah.
In 36 hours?
Yeah. Yeah, when you, I
actually can't get my head around it, Anne. Okay, so where what did you do in the middle then? Did you, after you did your second marathon then, what happened?
I suppose I went on and did a few more marathons, and I suppose I was curious then to see, I suppose, what the body and mind could do. You know, it was something I enjoyed, and I suppose I wanted to challenge myself. So I suppose I went from there. I would have done... you know, the we'll say the Connemara Ultra.
Right. What's that? How long is that?
That's a marathon and a half.
Right.
So I kind of tiptoed around distances.
39, just 39 on, just short miles. Of 40 miles. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there would be, we'll say, the Donaghy 50K race. Which
that's down in Kildare, yeah.
Yeah, which, yeah. again, would have tried that. So yeah. I kind of noticed as I started going up in distance, I kind of liked... I suppose the challenge, so there's a physical challenge, there's a mental challenge.
Yeah.
It's just curiosity.
Curiosity, right.
I suppose you there could you put go. It, or madness.
Why did you run 153 miles? I was curious, I was just curious.
That's it.
Yeah, read about it then, read about
it. I wait to see the sights.
Yeah. So when did you actually do the last one?
In 2019.
2019.
Yeah.
Okay. As I said, 400 people, it's something like, what, 60% drop out?
Yeah.
Yeah. But you were part of the 40% that made it
luckily,
to the line.
Yes, I was. Yeah.
Okay. We described the route to people. So you start in Athens and you end in Sparta.
Yes.
So what do you do in between? What sort of terrain are you crossing?
You have all different types of terrain. So, I mean, you start off, the first marathon is nearly like you're on the M50 as such.
Right.
But then you're running through vineyards and you're running, you have, I suppose, you have a climb at 100 miles, you have a mountain, which is kind of like...
even when you say it there, you're going... Because you're gone back there in your head, haven't you?
I go back there in my head,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, a climb at 100 miles.
Yeah. So you've all different types of terrain. I suppose you have, you know, I suppose you've got heat factors and you've got terrain factors and then you've got cut-off factors. So you have 75 cut-offs to meet along the way. 75, yes.
Right.
So if you don't meet any of those cutoffs,
you're gone.
You're put into the death bus, as they call it, and you're out.
So say, for example, the first 50 miles, you have to get there by within a certain amount of time,
yes.
or else you're gone.
Correct, yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then they continue along the way.
They continue along the way.
It's sort of to save you from yourself, is it? In a way.
It is. I mean, you can have a crew. You can bring over... a crew, if you wish, but they're allowed to assist you at 17 of those 75.
Right.
And you're told which 17 they are, and if they go near you at any other point, you're disqualified.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, if you manage to complete this in 2 weeks' time, you'll be the only Irish woman to complete two. Is that correct?
To complete two, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at the things that can happen to you. Hallucinations common after 24 hours of no sleep. Fainting. Blood pressure drops when runners stop, causing blackouts. Shrinking. They reckon you can shrink a half an inch during the race because of the pounding of your spine. Runners can burn 100 calories a mile but may feel too nauseous to eat. Blisters. Lose toenails. Feet swell. Chafing. Crotch, nipples, armpits.
Sounds great, doesn't
dehydration.
It?
Heat stroke. Somebody described that they've done research on people who cross the line and some of the symptoms are like people who suffer from cirrhosis of the liver.
Okay.
Yeah, you knew all this, didn't you? That's why your dad has read this now and he's gone.
Oh yeah, he's worrying.
He is worrying.
I know.
So tell me what's going on in your head now, because you were within 10 days of doing it last year and then it was cancelled.
Yeah.
That must have been, because it's huge preparation here, the amount of hours you put in a week. How many miles are you running a week?
It varies, to be quite honest. You've been training probably six days a week.
Yes.
So it's obviously been tougher because of COVID and things like heat training and that.
How do you do heat training?
Well, normally you would have done it through use of a steam room or a sauna.
What, do you go in and run in a sauna?
Well, you'd probably go in and you'd go into the gym, we'll say, in a full tracksuit and run the treadmill maybe for half an hour.
Right.
In about three or four layers and then into the sit in the steam room for about an hour. Afterwards, I suppose to adapt to the heat, because those poor Irish wouldn't be used to it.
Because you're running in temperatures of 37 degrees.
Yeah.
Just in case it wasn't difficult enough.
I know. And that's probably the hardest part
is the heat. But surely the psychological thing of, you know, like when you get hit 50 miles, knowing that you've 103 miles to go, that must be difficult, is it?
Well, I suppose I haven't thought of it that way. I suppose when I went to run it, I suppose getting on the start line to me in the first case was a privilege.
The fact that you met their requirements and you got drawn in the lottery.
And I got there.
So that's a big deal. Yeah. Okay, okay.
And I was on the start line with you know, all these...
Elites
to me, they're elites.
Well, you're an elite. Yeah.
I wouldn't say that. But so to me, I was running 75 races. So that's the way I broke it down.
Right.
So you would have, we'll say maybe, each stop between the checkpoints could be between 2.5K or 7K, 8K. Yes. So to me, it was like I was visualising my local park run. That's where I have to go to next, or I have to do something.
So it's what you've done as opposed to what you had to do psychologically.
Yeah. Psychologically.
I've done 3 out of 75. I've done 4 out of 75. And
It's a bit like that. And then you hit the mountain.
At 100 miles.
And you have to get over that. Yeah.
What do people who love you think about all this?
That I suppose they think I'm a little bit mad.
Yeah.
And I suppose they see it as inspiring. I suppose they wonder why I do it. But in a way, I look at it saying, I don't want to be here in 10 years' time looking back saying, I wished I'd tried something. I'm sure we're all the same.
So that question you've obviously asked yourself as well. And I would imagine when you're, I don't know, somewhere in the middle of the night and you're
imagining cows walking across in front of you.
Yeah, exactly, because you hallucinate, do you? What, have you hallucinated?
I have once before, yeah.
What did you see?
I saw lambs.
Right.
As a vegetarian, I saw lambs,
right.
Yeah.
Was there mint sauce involved in the place?
Didn't see that, no.
But you must ask yourself when you're in the middle of it and like you've 18 hours done and 18 hours to go, why am I doing this? And what answer do you come up with?
Oh, you do. And you say, well, I'm never doing this again.
Yes.
And this is it. This is at the end, I'm done. But I suppose you just have to keep pushing yourself. So you'll just, I suppose I distract myself with something else or I'll...
Like what?
Oh, I don't know. I'll think of... It could be anything. I think the last time I was naming out the Irish rugby team in my head and their positions. It really just
the men or the women?
The men.
The men, right.
Men,
okay.
Something to distract your head.
So you're going Conor Murray, Johnny Sexton. Is that in your head?
Well, something like
Bobby
that.
Henshaw.
Or, it could be anything. Just, I suppose, to distract your head or, again, visualising, I'm at my front door and I have to run.
Yes. And here's one of the other killers, one of the many killers involved in this race. You're not allowed to wear headphones.
No.
Because your man, Fidipides, he didn't have Beats back in the day.
No.
49 BC. So where are you at now? I read in this article that coming up, your final stages of preparation would involve a marathon a day. Are you at that level or...?
Not a marathon a day level. Everybody trains differently.
Yes.
Like you'd be definitely doing a marathon at least a week.
Okay.
Up until, I suppose, the peak of your training.
And what's the longest run you do before you do the race?
It's generally the Connemara 100 mile run.
100 mile run,
which
right.
I would have been on a couple of weeks ago.
Oh yeah, how'd you get on with that?
I unfortunately had to drop out at 80 miles
right.
this year. I was feeling unwell and I just didn't want to risk it.
Yeah.
But I was happy with, I suppose, the distance I had covered.
Yeah.
But generally, yeah, about 100 miles, and it is kind of your biggest time on your feet as such.
Right. So what do you do along the way? For like, there's water, obviously. Do you take, this is counterintuitive, but do you take salt tablets?
Yeah, you take...
What's the thinking there? What's the science behind that?
I suppose they're electrolytes, so it's
right.
You're sweating a lot. So I suppose it's getting the salts and that back in, electrolytes back into your system, really.
Yeah.
So you would, I suppose, on longer runs and things like that, you try and avoid the likes of the gels and that, because they kind of would play havoc with your stomach after a while.
And then you don't want that.
No, you don't want that. No.
Yeah, you should check out the Kerry Ultra Marathon. It took place over the weekend, 200 kilometres over the Kerry Mountains.
Yes.
Have you done that one?
No, I haven't.
No. 22 hours, 25 minutes, 44 seconds. That was Owen. Did that. So what's the date of it then? It's the, what date is it on?
The 24th of September.
24th of September, right.
Yes.
And there are five people, including yourself, taking part from Ireland.
there are, it is so, well, there's a few of us that are going over. Yeah. So we'll say there's three guys from the Philippines who live in Ireland,
yes.
One from the UK, and then there's three of us running, we'll say, under the Irish flag.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, good luck. And will you talk to us the other side?
I will.
How long does it take you to recover from that?
Oh, I suppose it depends. You probably think you're okay, but it takes, you know, you need to give yourself a good, I'd say, month anyways.
Month?
Just to, well, not, well, no, without, I suppose without running.
Yes, yeah.
You know, but. Yeah.
You're mad, but amazing.
Thanks.
that's what I think about it.
Thanks.
See, some of my friends think I'm mad just for doing, you know, 13.2 there on Saturday morning. They think I'm mad. So I must introduce them to you.
A different level of mad.
You're a different level of mad. Lovely to meet you, Anne.
Thanks so much
for coming in. Anish Tosha now, the Preep Skelton in Oakdale, Marion Ní Húlaoin. Good Marion. Thank you very much. 515 on radio.rt.ie. Anne is inspirational. A superwoman from all her friends in Ballinrobe. Yes, she's a Mayo woman living in Dublin. Swims is a palindrome if you turn it upside down. Did you know that? I don't think that qualifies. Who will use the kiosk? Anyone who can't find a toilet at night. How unbreakable are the LEDs? Well, don't know, Derek. But Connor has been back onto us and he was on for 17 minutes. So we reckon 17.50s is 8.50. Although he's been charged, he thinks, a tenner. So we're going to work on that. And if there is a problem, he's going to email pricewatch@rte.ie. Ray, our old phone box here in Clonakilty is a borrow and lend a bookstore, all free. Give a book, take a book. That's a great idea, isn't it? Yeah. Now it's time for our quiz of today. Here we go. Yep. Today, 6th of September, 10 questions on the way from events that happened on this day over the years, and a prize to give away too. Two nights stay in the Radisson Blue Hotel and Spa in Limerick. And Limerick City, a fantastic base to explore the wonders of both the Wild Atlantic Way and Ireland's ancient East. And you can find out more at iknewa.ie. All the things you can do around the Radisson Blue Hotel and Spa in Limerick. iknewa.ie. Hello, Katrina Devaney.
Hello, Ray.
You're near Tuam in Galway.
I'm actually in Tuam at the moment.
Are you? Right. Are you doing a bit of shopping or what?
I'm working, Ray.
You're working. What do you do?
Don't advise.
What do you do?
I work, my job title is a validation officer. I basically validate bills for payment. But I work as part of a very interesting and wonderful organisation called the National Federation of Group Water Schemes.
Right.
And you can appreciate group water schemes would be a very intrinsic part of the infrastructure in rural Ireland.
Yes.
They were developed by communities from the 1960s and onwards when grants were created.
And will you tell me a little bit about them? So are they like cooperatives or what are they?
Some of them are cooperatives. When they were formed initially, Ray, a lot of them would have been set up by trustees.
Yeah.
And they would have taken on the responsibility. Now, an awful lot of them have gone on to become cooperatives and some of them indeed limited companies. We came into a place in 1997. That's when we came into existence.
Right.
And we sort of organised them in a lot of areas, and some of them have amalgamated and formed large organisations. And indeed, it's a very interesting week, Ray, because today is the launch of our Rural Water Week. And we have a webinar running on Wednesday and Thursday.
Right. So you're busy in the office.
We're very busy.
Yeah.
We're very busy.
Yeah.
And our Rural Water Webinar, like I said, on Wednesday and Thursday.
This is for groups of people in remote areas that aren't served.
Not so remote, Ray.
Okay.
Not so remote.
Okay. Well, not so remote areas that aren't served by the normal infrastructure of water.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, there would have been a private supply. I mean, initially when they came into being, it was to get piped water into the area. But a lot of them have gone on now, and it's getting a quality supply in, as you can appreciate.
Yes, yes.
Quality has come into the game now. But they've really upped their game in the last number of years, and it's a wonderful service. And as you can appreciate, with the decline of rural Ireland, it's a wonderful service to have there. And the Group Water Scheme provides more than just water. It's part of the infrastructure.
Yes.
The intrinsic infrastructure in
now,
rural Ireland.
Good luck with that. I'm interested in talking to you about the last 18 months, and you've taken a look at your life. And are you going to change things as a result?
No, I possibly won't, Ray, because I'm quite happy where I am.
Right.
But my husband has decided to change his job.
Has he?
He was in a job.
Right.
He was in a job for 14 years. It was okay, but he decided to change. So he's starting his new job next Monday.
Aha. Well, that's Michael the hubby. Good luck with that, Michael.
Michael the hubby, yeah.
I'm sure he's not on his own. I'm sure a lot of people took a long look at their lives, and if they could, if they had the luxury of changing like Michael has, they've probably opted for change, or maybe not.
Yeah.
Who else is at home?
Who else is at home? Well, my husband is at home. There's only the two of us at home.
Right.
But Ray, I come from a large Irish family. I have 7 brothers and 4 sisters.
Wow, that is large. That's Ray, 12 in total, right?
Yeah. 12 in total. If I'm going to take this opportunity to say hello to my, what I call my half-daughter and my half-son, because my sister got another share with me.
Right.
Holly and John.
Holly and
they're
John.
They're on the way home to school at the moment with Ava and Saoirse.
Right, Holly and John.
So say a special hello to them and Rosaline. Yes.
There's Michael in the background shouting at you, isn't he? There's somebody talking behind you.
No,
there.
No, he's at home.
He's at home, right. Okay, you're up against Noel McEntee, who's in Carlow. How are you doing, Noel?
Hello, Ray. How are you doing
good
today?
Katrina says hello there as well.
Hello, Katrina.
Yeah. So it's you and Tinkle the cat.
Me and Tinkle, yeah. My wife Mary just arrived home, so maybe she can give me a hand. So.
Right, okay. So are you retired, Noel?
Yeah, I'm retired from AIB. I was 40 years with them, so I'm retired about 7 or 8 years.
And how has retirement been for you?
Well, it's been great, yeah. I've enjoyed it. It's a bit... So the lockdown didn't affect me too much because I was used to being at home anyway, you know.
Yeah,
it's good. I enjoyed it. I had a good time in the bank. I worked all around the country and they're doing different jobs. And every couple of years you could kind of reinvent yourself, so to speak, you know. Yeah. But no, it was good.
So you had a good 40 years, but you were ready for retirement when it came.
Very much so, yeah.
You're sort of a quiz veteran. You were on the Just a Minute with Larry a good few times, were you?
Oh, yeah, a good few times with Larry. And you used to have to ring up RTE sometimes to remind me to send out the fiver. But those were in the old days.
Yeah, I think my brother Hugh got a fiver check from RTE one stage. He was on a quiz with Marty Whelan when he was on in the afternoons back in the day. There you go.
Yeah, it was great.
I remember Marty said to him, because we're from, you know, a council estate, and I won't say the number of the house, but say it was 1357, you know, and Marty said to my brother Hugh, are there really that number of houses in the estate? And Huey, who wouldn't entertain fools, you know, he says, no. That was the end of that conversation.
Oh, the game was up, yeah.
Yeah, the game was up. Right, so 5 questions each. Whoever answers most correctly gets a prize. If it's a draw, we go to a tiebreak situation. Good luck, Katrina, in Tuam, and good luck to Noel in Carlow. Here we go.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Ray.
Right, Katrina, first question for you. On this day in 1873, the first regular cable car service began in San Francisco. In which U.S. state would you find San Francisco?
California.
That's correct answer. No. On this day in 1716, the first lighthouse built in North America was opened at Boston. In which U.S. state would you find Boston?
Massachusetts.
Is the correct answer. Katrina, second question is an audio one. Have a listen to this.
And if they keep on arguing with you, just respond with a simple creed. Is fate or link? Yes, we can.
On this day in 2012, that U.S. politician you heard accepted the Democratic nomination for the U.S. presidency. Can you name him?
Barack Obama.
This is the correct answer. And for you, Noel, audio, have a listen to this.
You are a very difficult woman.
Perhaps so, Your Majesty.
But you'll observe care that head shall never be higher than mine. When I shall sit, you shall sit. When I shall kneel, you shall kneel. Et cetera.
On this day in 1944, actor Yul Brynner married Virginia Gilmore in Los Angeles. You heard Yul Brynner there with Deborah Kerr in a scene from which famous movie?
The King and I.
That's correct. We watched it over and over again when we were kids. I don't know how we did, because we didn't have tape recorders or anything like that, but we did. Okay, question number 3, Katrina. On this day in 1940, Crown Prince Michael succeeded Carol II as King of Romania. Which of these countries does Romania share a land border with? Hungary or Poland?
Hungary.
That's the correct answer. Noel, on this day in 1791, Mozart's opera La Clemenza premiered in Prague in the Czech Republic. Which of these countries does the Czech Republic share a land border with? Austria or Croatia?
Austria.
That's the correct answer. You two are good. Katrina, music question for you. Have a listen.
Take on me.
And this day in 1961, Pal Whatgar, sorry, Whaktar, guitarist and vocalist with that group, was born in Oslo. Can you name the group, Katrina? Yeah. We were saying it's a palindrome earlier on, but there's a dash in it, so I think that probably disqualifies it as a palindrome. Anyway, it's the correct answer. That's all you need to know. Now, Noel, a music question for you. Have a listen to this. This day in 1980, Kerry Katona, singer-songwriter with that group, was born in Warrington, Cheshire. Can you name the group?
Kerry Katona.
Yeah.
No, I can't.
No. Atomic Kitten. That was
right.
That was number one back in 1980. Okay, you're not out of it yet, Noel. You're on three. Katrina, you're on four. Now, Katrina, if you get this final one correct, then you are today's winner and Noel can't catch you. However, if you get it wrong and then Noel proceeds to get his final question correct, then we're in a tie-break situation. Good luck on this one, Katrina. On this day in 1991, the name St. Petersburg was restored to the second largest city in Russia. Which of these countries has a larger population than Russia? Japan, Pakistan or Ethiopia?
Pakistan.
You said with confidence. Ethiopia has 114 million, Japan 126 million, Russia 145, and Pakistan 220 million people. So that's right, and you are today's winner, Katrina Devaney.
Congratulations,
Noel, McEntee. Hard luck there, Noel. Hard luck on that. Katrina's good. We're going to send you out two Ray Darcy Show mugs.
Oh, that's great.
One for you and one for Mary. Okay.
Yeah.
Lovely talking to you, Noel. Mind yourself.
You too, Ray.
Yeah, see you
now.
Bye. Katrina, well done.
Thank you very much, Ray. Thank you very, very much.
You're off now to the Radisson Blue Hotel and Spa in Limerick for a two-night break.
That is super.
Yourself and Michael, probably. I'm assuming you bring Michael. I'm
not
I shouldn't assume.
And Holly and John and all the rest.
inua.ie if you want to find out more about the hotel. inua.ie. And good luck with the webinar this week. Great talking to you. Well done, Katrina.
Thank you very much, Ray.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, I bumped into Mick Flannery on the steps of the Radio Centre last week. He was in with Susan O'Neill recording with the RTE Concert Orchestra for a programme that's going out over the October bank holiday. And he kindly left me a copy of their new album, which is called In the Game. And this is from it. It's called Chain Reaction. That's lovely. Mick Flannery and Susan O'Neill and Chain Reaction from their CD, In the Game. Do people buy CDs anymore? It's available to download and stream and whatever else you want to do right now. Just a tweet there from Carla Weather. It's 24 and a half degrees centigrade in Killarney right now. So that's lovely summer weather, and that's lovely summer music as well. Now, this year's Shake and Bog Festival will focus on the life of renowned filmmaker and environmentalist Eamon de Butler. Colin Stafford Johnson is taking part in the panel discussion, and he's with me now in a booth down the corridor. How are you doing, Colin?
Oh, I'm very well, Ray. Thanks. Yeah, no worries.
Sorry, I feel a bit rude inviting you into the Radio Centre and then putting you off in a booth. But that's
it's quite all right.
I'm sure things will change in the coming weeks. But anyway, so Eamon de Butler, his name was synonymous with wildlife photography and camera work for a long time in this country. He was the first, wasn't he?
He was very much the first, yeah. And I think that's what will always, always have a real special place because of that. And of course, back in the days when there was very little choice around, I guess, in television.
Yes.
And so, you know, now you can tune into so many channels. But it was really quite an event when one of his series came on, you know.
Yeah.
You sort of knew it was coming on. And it was great. And they were great programmes. And it was, you know, it was a time when I think he taught a lot of people a lot of things about our natural world.
And was he a hero of yours?
Yeah, I mean, I knew him. I worked with him in sort of at the sort of very start of my career, I suppose. And he would always give me advice and that sort of thing. And then I ended up working on the same series with him, a series called Wild Islands. I think that was back in the 90s, I guess.
Okay.
And he ended up, of course, but he was the only person who could actually film pretty much edit, narrate, and play the music for all his own shows.
Right.
So he was a multi.
He was a one-stop shop.
He really was. He really was. Yeah.
What wouldn't
yeah,
he do yeah. well now? Wouldn't he? Because that's the way it's gone again. It's come full circle, nearly, hasn't it?
I know, but don't be telling the powers to be that, or they'd have you doing everything.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I remember somebody pointing out his house to me out in Delgany. Isn't that where he lived? And I think there was a pheasant in the garden or something, like, or not a pheasant.
Might have been a peacock.
A peacock. Not a pheasant. A pheasant wouldn't be that remarkable, but a peacock would be. Yeah, there was a he had a peacock roaming around the garden, did he, out there? Yeah.
He did indeed. And I think I passed that way not too long ago, and I think I heard it calling. Every time I hear a peacock, I think of tigers, because they live with tigers in India. I spent a lot of my life in India filming tigers, and I associate that sound intimately with India, and indeed the roar of a tiger. So it's always sort of odd to hear one over here.
And do they live alongside each other in perfect harmony?
Well, not perfect harmony. I mean, if the tiger can catch one, they probably will. Leopards get them mostly. But they roost high up in the trees at night. You see them on the ground, but they roost high up in the trees at night, away from danger.
Okay.
And then they tend to travel in groups and mostly avoid tigers. I saw one taken one day, but an unwary peacock.
Yeah. So Saturday, the 11th of September at Mermaid Arts from 10 a.m. And you're involved in the panel discussion. That'll start at 12 noon, and more information at shakingbog.ie. Now, you're doing something which I think there's a growing interest in, and that is sort of wilding. Is there a verb now to wild something? Or
Well, I hope so. It's becoming that way. At least it's something, once you say it, people sort of know what you're talking about. And it's the idea is trying to really promote the native over the exotic too. So I'm designing a garden. My dad was the first TV gardener on Irish TV.
Yes.
And I grew up in a garden centre in the nurseries, and you know.
And you're a trained horticulturist, are you?
I was trained by my dad.
Oh, you're right.
I wasn't officially trained.
Right,
No. So I know very little about it at some level. So, yeah. And I admit that openly at the start of the programme. So this is a series for BBC, and I think it's called The Wild Gardener. And so the idea is trying to design a garden just using native Irish plants.
Okay.
Because the key is, if you have all those native plants there, they are the plants upon which our insects depend. The plants start everything. The greater diversity of plants you have, the greater diversity of insects you will have. And then everything up the chain follows on from that. And an awful lot of the gardening we do, in fact, is environmentally... what would you say? Not very good.
Okay, yes.
You know.
So we're, it's not as simple as just returning to the way it was before people started gardening. It's a bit more difficult than that, I think.
There's plenty to it, and there's much in it as you want it to be. Now, I'd be a pretty idle gardener. I want to do the minimum. You know, I don't have the time.
Well, wilding sounds like it's right up your street then.
Well, it is. So, but you put in, you know, a native hedgerow as opposed to a hedge.
Yes.
All the different native plants, the hawthorns
and the native hedgerow would have been the one that we would have played. We had a tunnel in it down the back of the garden. Tiny little dark green leaves on it. Is that the traditional one?
Well, it may not be, you see.
No.
You may
right.
be describing a hedge, which often is a fairly dead thing.
Uh-huh.
A lot of hedges we grow are really, the odd bird might nest in them, but they're not really advantageous to wildlife.
Okay.
Whereas if you plant a native hedgerow with, you know, a hawthorn and whitethorn and gelder rose and spindle.
So that was actually a hedge as opposed to a hedge.
Exactly,
exactly.
But you know, if you go for a wander along a country lane and there's a hedge row with all the different sort of native Irish trees in it, that is the thing that's most valuable.
Okay.
And why not have that in your garden as opposed to your standard old hedge? You don't have to do it. It's very easy to grow, and that's the thing. I haven't had to water anything in my garden in the last 2 years because everything's adapted to this climate.
Okay.
So it just grows.
There's a growing number of people talking about this and a growing number of people getting interested in it and people wanting to do it in their back gardens. Do you think it's a fad or do you think it's here to stay?
I don't think it's fad at all. I think we are on the cusp of a total change. I think a lot of us feel that, you know, there's not an awful lot we can do about what's happening in the world, but this is something everyone can do. Look out your window, look out at your lawn and your hedge and think, well, no wonder there's nothing living out there because I haven't given them any place to live, you know. But if you create ponds and hedgerows and then also, you know, fruit trees and all that sort of thing as well. But if you base your garden on native things, it will automatically start to fill up so with the wild things.
We'll see this when it eventually goes out in the BBC, but you have a plot of about an acre in Wicklow.
That's right. That's right. An old sort of family plot where my dad used to garden. And once upon a time, when I was a kid, it was sort of a, it was an orchard with almost Wimbledon grass underneath it, you know, perfectly kept. when I went to have a look at it, it was just one massive patch of brambles.
Right.
And now I try to convert that into something that's useful for as many creatures as possible. So the idea is that I'm hoping that the little creatures can come and live out their entire lives on my property.
Do you know what I came across when I was on holidays, and it never happened before? I encountered three or four dead little field mice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Little grey ones.
Yeah, beautiful little creatures. Yes, and of course, they're very important to have around. I mean, I've got lots of them on my property. I don't see them all the time. But recently, I had long-eared owls hunting in the garden, and that's what they would have been hunting.
Right, okay.
So again, you promote the, once you get the wild flowers in, the wild seeds come, and all the, you know, the field mice and the newts and the frogs and the butterflies and the dragonflies and damselflies and all these things will just turn up. And it's a wonderful, so I'm very much thinking, not what it looks like to me, but how useful it will be.
Well, you see,
them.
Here's the thing. You've hit on my next question. It's the aesthetic of a garden that appeals to a lot of people, isn't it?
It is, but I think aesthetics are changing. I mean, I remember, I come from that place with the manicured
the perfectly
lawns.
And
now I just look at it and I think, why did I find that acceptable? When I know I always had an interest in the natural world, and that is doing nothing for the natural world, you know. And a lot of us, I mean, some people are mad keen about the gardens. I'm not expecting everyone to go and dig them up and get rid of them. But a lot of us aren't all that mad keen about gardening and don't want to spend a lot of time in it. So why not go wild and go native? And it's cheap too.
I'm nearly sure his name is Paul Harkin. I don't know if you've heard about this man and his family, that they've created what he believes to be the world's first wild bee sanctuary in Wicklow.
Oh, yes. Yes, I have, down in Tinnaheely someplace.
Yes. So he's doing that as well. And it, because when I think about it, you know, how do you know, like, it's not as if you can cordon them in and you see this spot of land with all the bees, and then when you go beyond that, there are no bees there. You know, so how do you measure? You mentioned the owls already. How do you measure how successful your project is?
Well, when I stand in my garden at this time of year, you can hear this low hum.
Right.
That you can sense the life in it. It's full of buzzing things.
Isn't that lovely?
Honeybees and solitary bees and butterflies fluttering by and all these things, because the food plants that the butterflies need to lay their eggs are there.
Right.
The plants that the moths need to lay their eggs on are there. So everything, you know, once the plants are there, once the infrastructure is there for these creatures, they will just turn up. And it's, you know, some things turn up really quickly, and it's been a really good experience. I mean, I set off saying I am not a gardener, you know. Yeah. And I'm sure there are garden designers who could design something that looks aesthetically beautiful as well in a more conventional way. I'm more kind of chuck things around and see if they grow. And I like that really.
Let nature do its thing.
Nature is the guiding hand. Absolutely. Absolutely. Right.
So I'm looking forward to seeing that. It's on November on the BBC. Just, I suppose people are going, but what about maintenance, Ray? What about, ask them about maintenance. So if you do this, say it, if you decide to do it at home, all of your back garden, if you're lucky enough to have one or a bit of it, is it maintenance free?
Not maintenance free. No, everything needs management. It's not this idea that you just abandon a patch of land. If you want a wildflower meadow, you've got to work at it. But the good news is you only have to cut the grass once a year and clear it once a year. Now, there's a lot of people thinking, give us a wild garden. Hedges maybe trim back every few years. You know, there's actually very little to go. Ponds almost look after themselves.
Right.
So it's minimal work. Minimal expenditure too.
Sounds attractive. Sounds very attractive.
I hope so.
Yeah. So just, I'll tell him again about the Shake and Bog Festival, shakeandbog.ie. Colin Stafford-Johnson, good luck with everything. Thanks so much for coming into our booth today. And mind yourself. That's it from us. Sarah and Cormac are on the way on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.